All right, so the depths of Christ's suffering. Jesus accomplished the work of redemption as the messianic son of the living God, but he needed to bear the brunt of that work as a man. We talked a little bit about this last time in the incarnation as well. The writer of Hebrews paints a vivid image. So in Hebrews 5:7, it says, "In the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. God secretly sustains the son's human obedience as he faces his most severe test." And so this is where you kind of get the atheistic or the Muslim joke about the high priestly prayer that Jesus does in the Garden of Gethsemane. And, you know, Jesus is praying to himself about himself for what he will do to himself. Well, no, that's modalism, essentially. And also, if Jesus is a Jewish believer in God, who else would he be praying to? He's not an atheist, so who would he be praying to? He would be praying to his father. And so this is where we need to understand exactly the incarnation model that Christianity brings up.
Jesus had two natures, right? Yes, and the Trinity says that God is three persons, and so Jesus can pray to the Father.
Right.
So as Jesus is hoisted up on the cross, Christensen tells us his mental anguish soon converges on a singularly dense point of unfathomable duress, right? While menacing blackness hovers over his crucified form and the unearthly silence pours over his blood-red head, right? His redemptive suffering has reached its apex. And on this lonely beam, the cross on which he has battered body is nailed. But then, he says, comes the very darkest moment when his agony was so compacted, so infinite, as to be well nigh unsustainable. Right? The whole entail of sin, right? Pains and agony that it would have taken the world an eternity to endure were poured out on him in that horrific moment.
Right. I think this is where we need to be more careful when we talk about the events of the cross and the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, especially when it comes to believers, because I think it's easy to say, oh, Jesus was led on this path. He, you know, got whipped a few times. I'm sure it hurt. He was nailed to the cross. He died early for some odd reason. And then, he's put in a grave. And then 3 days later, he rose again. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But we have to realize exactly what we talk about when we talk about sin. Sin is completely against his godly nature. And that is thrusted upon him. And not just one person's, but everybody's
throughout eternity.
Sin for all of history of his people, and then the sins of the entire world on top of that. All of creation sin is put on him, and he suffers in that moment, as well as suffering with whips and lashes and pierced wrists and
so there's
and feet.
There's a physical suffering, which clearly, you know, the Romans knew how to do right?
Yeah, they were pros at it.
Yeah, but there's this spiritual kind of side of it, right?
Yeah.
That's probably more horrific from his perspective than the physical suffering.
Right. And then on top of that, at the apex of suffering under the weight of that, he has the Father's divine wrath poured on him so that it all the evil, all the bad, all the ick that humanity has allowed itself to accomplish,
which needed to be punished by a just and holy God,
right? That's where we have to understand the completeness of God's character. The divine wrath is poured out on him, and in that moment, that's one of the reasons why he dies early than the thieves hanging on the cross around him, and it's from that death, then 3 days later, in fulfillment with the scripture. It's not an immediate, it's not a snap decision he's come back to life, he's paid it. There's a waiting game there where it's the the holding your breath moment of the story. It's, you know, the shot rings out. You don't know if the good guy's shot or the bad guy's shot, and you wait for one of them to fall. There's a quote that I think I shared online today where it was, the apostles are hiding. The Romans are cleaning off their tools. The Jews are celebrating. The devil is laughing, and Christ is in the grave. But Sunday is coming. We do a disservice to what Christ saves us from and how he saved us when we don't take seriously in our own words that description. And it's hard to do, especially from a reprobate mind, and it's kind of hard to get along that fact. But that message is also the one that saves us. It brings people from dead men to life. And it took a life man dead to then raise himself again from the dead, showing the sacrifice, the penalty was paid in full. And so that's one of the reasons the resurrection also had to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's why we need to do our due diligence. And again, this is more of a statement against me than anybody else, of doing a better job of portraying that. And I think this chapter has helped talked about the importance of that and exactly what's happening. It's not just here's an event that happens, but here's where God is most glorified. And so, yeah. So we expect
the greatest event in human history. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.